Well, hello, hello, guys, and you're listening to Dr. K. This is Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. In case you don't know me, I'm a facial plastic surgeon. That's right, I specialize in faces and beauty. And today on the podcast, I'm super excited to be in Manhattan, in the heart of New York City, with fabulous plastic surgeon Dr. Laura Devgan. And in case if you don't know her, let me just say a few things. She has a bazillion followers on Instagram. She's chief medical officer of Real Self. She's an overall boss babe, girl power, CEO of Devgan Scientific Beauty, and she's plastic surgeon to the fabulous, all the stars. So let's say hi to Laura.
Hi, thank you so much. It's so fun to be doing this.
I know, I'm so excited. So I've known you for quite a while, but I met you in depth this year going to several plastic surgery conferences together. And I think it's amazing that we have very similar lives. I have four kids. And then Laura, how many kids do you have?
Six.
And they're all under 6 years old. Is
that right? That is, in fact, true. I have a lot of kids. We have 10 children between us. That's amazing.
That's got to be like a world record for offspring and female plastic surgeons. Six kids. And then I have a set of twins. Mine are a little bit older. They're in college at Georgetown. I have a boy and a girl fraternal twin. And you have twins.
I have two boy fraternal twins, and they are four.
Yeah, so we have very funny, interesting, amazing lifestyles on the East Coast and the West Coast. But today I thought we'd talk about a few different things. Like, well, number one, a lot of my clients have questions about their boobs, and I only do faces, so I thought we could focus in on boobs, and maybe I can ask you some of my questions that I have too, because, you know, I deal in faces.
Absolutely. And breasts are such a common topic of conversation because, as you may or may not know, breast augmentation is the most commonly performed cosmetic procedure in the United States and one of the most popular ones in my practice. So we could definitely get into it about breasts.
Well, let's start, because in LA we have this fascination with big boobs, and I don't think that's necessarily the healthiest for a woman's posture, spine, and their back. I love, you know, the voluptuousness of it, but I know New York has a very different aesthetic. So what do you find like looking at women's trends?
In my practice, I think the trend is definitely toward smaller, more conservative breast augmentation results. So everyone's different, and that's what I tell all my patients, that I'm going to customize a result for you and your unique anatomic characteristics and your desired results. But I would say, by and large, I'm more known for a natural result, and more of my patients tend toward slightly more conservative desires.
I think that's fabulous, and it looks really beautiful in real life, and I also think it echoes what the woman's body needs. I want to make sure that patients understand that when you sign up for a boob job, you don't sign up for just one boob job your whole life. Isn't that true?
Yes. So, well, let me first start by saying that breast surgery is in three different broad categories. And then I'm talking about cosmetic breast surgery. So you have breast augmentation, which is also known as breast implants. That's to make the breasts larger or more symmetric or more shapely. Next, you have breast lift, which is using your own tissues to just lift the breasts into a little bit of a better form. And then finally, you have breast reduction, which is reducing the size of breasts that are overly large and maybe causing you back pain or other symptoms. And then apart from that, which is the main focus of my world, we also have reconstructive breast surgery, including breast cancer reconstruction. But back to your original question, in terms of breast implants, it is true that even though they're very durable and very well-studied devices, they're not considered lifetime devices. You know, you're not born with breast implants, and you're probably going to have to get them switched out at least one other time in your life. So that's something to think about.
What is the average lifespan of a typical, like, gummy bear implant?
So there's no exact answer to that question, but I would say that there's no expiration date on implants. So in the past, people used to say switch them out every 10 years. Now people are saying, in my field, you can keep your breast implants as long as you like them and you're not having any concerns with them and the breast implants are intact. So we have patients who've had implants in place for 10, 15, 20, and even more years. But everyone's a little bit different, so the body changes over time. You know, the breasts you have at 40 are not the same as the breasts you have at 20. Isn't that correct?
Hey, you're talking to a woman who's had four children and twins, so.
I think we all can appreciate that there are some changes, but, you know, a specific in-person consultation with a plastic surgeon is always going to be your best bet for advice that pertains to you exactly.
Is there something we can do, like in pregnancy or in nursing or afterwards, that can improve the elasticity, like the firmness and support of the boobs?
Yes, and a lot of people don't realize this, but there are two pretty simple things that you can do in terms of preventative care for your breasts. One of those is to keep the breasts well moisturized just by using any kind of emollient moisturizer. And, you know, obviously I'm biased toward the Great One in my line, but you could really use any kind of moisturizer to keep your skin supple. And that's especially important during periods of big weight fluctuation like pregnancy and nursing. That can help you avoid or reduce the risk of getting stretch marks. The second important thing is wear a bra all the time, even when you go to sleep.
That sucks, by the way. Sorry. I did not want to hear that.
I know, and nobody wants to hear that. And I know a lot of people who live for coming home and taking off their bras. But the breasts are supported by these tenuous, tiny little ligaments called Cooper's ligaments that are like these little strings of tissue holding up this whole massive mound of the breast. So if you can wear a bra, it takes some pressure off of your own skin and tissue and helps you reduce the risk of stretching and sagging of the breasts.
I hate that idea. How about, like, can I wear a soft yoga exercise bra, or I have to wear those horrible underwires at night?
You can wear anything that supports you well, but the basic idea is you want to hold your breasts up in the position where you want them to be. And I will say that this is not magic. You know, a bra is a great preventative technique, but it's not going to solve all of your problems. There's a huge genetic tendency toward how your breasts are going to look. And also, if you've had kids, you've fluctuated in weight, or you just inherited a certain kind of genes, even if you're religious about wearing a bra, you may still experience aging, sagging, drooping, or ptosis of the breasts.
Interesting. And so can you still breastfeed after breast implants?
Yes.
Should you try to have your babies and get all that out of the way first and then get implants?
It doesn't matter. And a lot of my patients, probably about half of my patients, have breast implants put in before they have kids and the other half after. And they're two different sets of women, and you can do great either way. Breast implants do not change your ability to breastfeed. So they're not going to have any effect on that, especially if they're placed with an incision that's underneath the breast in the fold or the crease.
Is that like your favorite spot? Because I think scarring and healing are so important to make sure that girls get it done right.
Yeah. There are three incision sites that you can use for breast implants. One's in the armpit. I don't recommend that because it's very hard to visualize the breasts for the surgeons, and the armpit is inherently contaminated, so there's a little bit of a higher risk of infection. The same with going around the areola. Some people like that approach, but you're traversing the milk glands and milk ducts, and there's a little bit of a higher risk of capsular contracture, which is when implants get really tight and hard. My preferred incision site is underneath the breast in the fold. So if you have an underwire bra, it's like right where the wire hits your chest, and it's a tiny little incision, a little bit more than an inch, so it's super small, and that's where I put the incision even on swimsuit models who are, you know, hardly wearing anything all day long, and you can barely see it because it fades well and your body has a natural tendency toward a little bit of a shadow right there.
I've seen your breastwork and your incisions are like invisible, and you do some of the most beautiful women in the world. So I think that's super important to find a surgeon who takes time to be meticulous. And I think you and I have a preference for women surgeons. Like, there's just something different about a woman's hands versus a man's. And I'm just going to say that right out there, all you guys listening to my podcast. What do you think?
What do you think, guys? Well, so here's the thing. I think you can be a talented surgeon of
politically any, correct. Of,
you can be a talented surgeon with either gender, any background.
Transgender too.
And that also, you know, it doesn't matter what your characteristics are, but I do agree with you that there is a certain mindset of meticulousness that makes a big difference in your results. And if you really pay attention to what you're doing, I think we'll both agree that the difference between a good surgical result and an excellent result is in the millimeters.
I totally agree with that. And you're so politically correct, and I am not. And I'm just going to say that guys, they have like big sausage fingers, and I have like delicate, dainty, just like every woman hands and I take my time and I know how to do precision work. Like, you girls know, you can put lashes on, you do your nails, you do like very meticulous tasks. And women do things differently. And I, as a woman, do a woman's face differently than a man plastic surgeon. And so often I meet amazing men plastic surgeon who are doing crazy great stuff and academically so talented, but would I trust them to put eyeliner on for me? No. So why the hell am I going to trust them to put like face filler in me? Because I think that we do it differently with some kind of art and finesse that just, you know, a woman's face, you know, a woman's body, you know what you want in your body, you know what you like when you see it in a model's body. I just feel it's different. What
do you think? Yeah. I mean, you know, it's funny, this extreme attention to detail, but tissue handling and gentle tissue handling is really everything, whether it's an injectables result for your face, a surgical result for the neck, a body result in surgery. It's kind of like in grade school, there were some kids who turned in their homework all crumpled up, and technically all the answers were correct, but it just wasn't as good as the people who turned in their homework in like a nice trapper keeper, and it was all perfect and highlighted. And
wait, millennials don't know what a trapper keeper is. It's like one of those fancy fold-up notebooks where you perfectly preserve homework because the edges don't crinkle.
Exactly. Yes. It's an old-fashioned word for notebook.
And I know that there are men that I would trust to put on my eyeliner on, these fabulous makeup artists. But you know what? It's few and far between. And also, they actually have a lot more feminine aesthetic to themselves and their work, I would have to say. The men that I trust to do my face and cut my hair, they have a lot of female characteristics.
Well, you know, I'm not trying to be politically correct. I genuinely believe that it doesn't matter who you are. You can have great hands and do great meticulous work no matter what your background is. But that being said, I personally find that I really appreciate the concept of delicacy in everything. Like, I love to have my homework all nice and crisp when I turn it into the teacher. And I loved that in grade school.
Type A personality.
And I love to have my results really nice and perfect. And, you know, that being said, it is important, if you're listening to this podcast, to know that the concept of perfection is sort of a false concept in surgery and in life. We always strive for that, but it's like an asymptote where we get closer and closer and closer to the concept of symmetry and perfection, knowing that it's never fully achievable.
That's very true. And I think that being a type A perfectionist woman myself, I want to encourage all my patients and Instagram followers and people listening to not be a perfectionist about your face. Like, some of the things that make you the most inherently beautiful are your little quirky imperfections. And we've actually done studies that show that faces that have 100% perfect symmetry, where you echo the left and right side and match mirror images, are not as beautiful as asymmetric faces. So perfection in beauty and in life is sometimes detrimental or subtracts from the beauty.
Yeah, I agree with that, because, you know, you really want to, as a plastic surgeon, achieve perfect symmetry and perfection, but at the same time, you don't want to impart a problematic body image onto your patients. And, you know, for all the listeners and followers on the podcast, I think that's important to think about. I tell all my patients to think of their results, whether it's from surgery or injectables, as an improvement over baseline, rather than as a shortfall from perfection. So, you know, we're going to work on getting you exactly perfect, but you should de-stress and just appreciate how you feel more confident and feel a little better in your skin.
I think so. I think one of my goals is to make women in general really feel confident, and also learn to appreciate your inner beauty and not focus as much on your outer beauty, and give you the tools to just have some amazing features that bring out your own natural features, make them pop so that you stop obsessing and you just get that little confidence. But I think our responsibility as plastic surgeons is huge. And having three daughters, I have three daughters, you have two daughters. So I definitely think that it is very important to me to make sure that they go into the world not obsessing about every detail on their face and self-critical and having self-hatred for this and that feature of their face. And I bring home my work and I see these fabulous, beautiful women feeling upset about how their faces look. And my first job is to make them feel confident in my chair. Like, you're beautiful. You don't need any of this.
Yeah. Well, I know this is your podcast, but let me ask you a question. Do you
talk to your daughters openly about what you do, and do they have a good understanding of the concept of plastic surgery?
I definitely do. And my daughters are super smart and have helped me on my Instagram and my videos and stuff like that. So they are really knowledgeable. And of course, they are surrounded by these images every day. And I, you know, sometimes my daughter will say, I hate my nose, or I want, you know, can I do my lips someday? And I'm like, yes, whenever you want, whenever you're not scared. This is the daughter who cut her finger and fainted at the sink at the sight of blood. And the other daughter, I had to chase around the kitchen counter to give her flu shot like 5 times before she'd stop. So I know they're never going near injectables or surgery anytime soon. But
your daughters are older than mine. Mine are little. They're 5 months and 2 years. So yeah. We really are definitely not having this conversation. But your daughters are teenagers. So
mine are 13, 17, and 19. So right in that age where they're getting inundated with media images of beauty and fabulous, unattainable, like, you know, who can be Kylie in real life or who can be a supermodel in real life. So I really try to bring it down to earth for them. And I tell them, look, I see these women when they come into my office with no makeup on, sweatpants, and a hair bun. And they are regular girls just like all of us. And it takes a lot of work to look like a polished model. And that includes facial contouring, like cheek filler, nose filler, jawline filler, Botox, little bits of maintenance. And these women that are in these fields that have to be models and be constantly scrutinized, it erodes at their confidence. And I don't want my daughters turning into that. But I do want them to become women who take time for self-care and preserve their beauty, right?
Totally. I was just chatting with one of my patients last week, and she's a professional model, and she was talking to me about how in the modeling industry, you're basically over when you're 22, 23, and that there's so much scrutiny on how you look that it sort of tears apart a lot of her friends and the people that she works with. And it was really heartbreaking because, you know, there's got to be a way for us, and I think you and I have a lot of responsibility in this, but there's got to be a way for us to help empower women and men to look and feel their best without creating these crazy concepts of unattainable body image. And I really look to our generation of, you know, modern, young, with it, female plastic surgeons to help reshape the definition of what beauty means and how we can help people look and feel more beautiful without creating this oppressive, horrible self-hatred feeling that was the thing for like decades and decades.
I agree. And then I want to make sure, and you say this well, I've heard you speak in some lectures talking about how you can be a woman of substance and still want to make sure that you look good and feel good. Let your face reflect how strong you feel and how confident you feel. And there, I tell my patients, there is no way that you can go for 80 years. Imagine your body as your vehicle for this life. You can't drive a car for 80 years and not put maintenance into your vehicle, because how can it last? You're going to need to refresh, tune up, fine tune. So you need to do your face maintenance. And I want to make it that simple for patients that you take care of your teeth. You maintain your teeth every 6 months. Why the heck are you not going to maintain your face? This is your image, what you present to the world, what you see in the mirror, which reflects your energy, your sense of hope and optimism and how good you feel about yourself, right? So remember, like, just do your maintenance and do things at micro treatments at regular intervals is the way to go. That's what I say.
I totally agree with that. And it's funny, I started using Botox myself when I was 27 because I didn't want to, you know, get deeply etched facial wrinkles and things like that. And at that time, I kept it super secret because I was really embarrassed about it. Mm-hmm. And I've kind of reached a point where I really don't care. and I sort of, like, that's the magic of your 30s. It's that decade in your life where you're like, F it. You can think whatever you want about me. This is me and this is what I'm doing. But more to your point, I think that, you know, the little things that I do for maintenance, taking great care of my skin, going to the gym, trying to drink some green juice, eat healthy, play with my kids, you know, just be a normal person, sleep, do stuff I like. All of that stuff is, you know, that helps me be a better mom and wife and partner and doctor.
So, yes, I completely agree. And I actually, funnily enough, started Botox also at age 27. So, and it's helped my face tremendously. And I do all the full regimen of skincare. And I think that's like my 5 minutes of the day to take care of myself. And you know, I really want every woman, including my daughters, to be able to have that where they do take care of themselves. And they, I'm sorry, but you know what? Women are judged by their beauty in this world, in this life. So you need to maintain your beauty. You need to not let your cheeks start drooping, get sagging, and get downturns on your lower face. I just think that there's small, safe things that you can do. And so why should we not do those things? It's like, why should you not wear sunscreen? You should, to protect your face. And I don't want there to be a stigma anymore about doing things to your face. So I'm so proud of my women models and influencers and actresses who are open about what they do on their faces. Because for so long, it's been hidden. And everyone's just thought that, oh, you know, these movie stars just age fabulously because they drink green juice and eat, drink like 5 liters of water a day. And that's just such horse, you know, horse crap. I was trying to edit that to be PG-13 for iTunes. So it's just not true.
Okay. Well, we'll try to not give you an explicit rating. But I think to your point, I can't mention any names, obviously, and I know neither can you, but we both take care of some of the most beautiful and frequently photographed and most handsome and attractive men and women in the world. And all of these little interventions are omnipresent. So for those of you who are sitting at home debating whether you should do this or that, or feeling like, oh my gosh, there's so many more important things going on in the world. How can I devote this hour of my year to self-care, etc.? You know, you should know that this stuff is omnipresent, not just in Hollywood and New York City, but your neighbor, your friend. This kind of stuff is going on all over the place. And I definitely don't think that people should enter into the world of tweakments or medical aesthetics or plastic surgery if they don't want to. It's one of these things where you really should feel like you can be your own kind of beautiful. And if that means being all natural, vegan, organic, then you should do it. If that means coloring your gray hair or, you know, getting an extra piercing or being goth, then you should do it. And if that means that you want a little Botox because you don't like wrinkles in your forehead, or you want a little bit of a plumper lip or a more shapely figure, then do that too. As long as you're making decisions that are for you and not because someone else is pressuring you, and you're going to someone who's a reputable board certified plastic surgeon, and you're doing stuff that's medically responsible and safe, then I think, you know, do what makes you happy.
I totally agree. And I love that you were part of this Later Haters campaign for one of the big companies out there, because I do echo that sentiment. Later haters, like, it's time to not have judgment and regrets. And like, it is your life and your one and only face. And take the time to do what makes you happy. It's about you. You do reach a point in life where you say, like, I don't have that many years on the planet. I need to do the things that are right for me that make me happy. And I agree with seeing a board certified surgeon. Please don't go to one of these little pop-up shops, which is like pop-up Botox, pop-up lasers. Like, it's not the same as dry bar. You can't just get a blowout. This is really a medical intervention. I don't think patients should be cheaping out on their faces and getting Groupons. It's just so risky, and you have so much to lose and so little to gain from saving $100.
Right? Completely. And it's just one of these things where, you know, life is uncertain. Life does not make you any promises, no matter who you are or what you're doing, even if you're in the most skilled hands in the world. But would you rather be on a 747 jet with a pilot who's been down that flight path a million times? Or would you like to be in like a little puddle jumper with someone who's doing it for the first time? You know, you can't guarantee that your plane will safely arrive, but you know that you can reduce your risk by going with the more experienced, more rigorous, more trained route. And those are the decisions that I would make for myself and my family members. And one gut check that I have when I'm giving people medical advice is, and I urge you guys, if anyone's in the medical profession, to think about this, what would I tell my own mother or sister or best friend, or what would I do for myself? And if I ever feel like I'm telling a patient something that would deviate from that, I check myself and I only give advice that I would personally take or give to a family member. And that's how I know that I'm doing the right thing for the patient. So for my family and for my friends and for myself, I would only go to the most qualified people possible, and I would not treat getting a sharp object stuck in your face the same thing as it's not the same as getting a manicure.
Yeah, and I have mixed feelings about people seeing physician extenders, like, you know, nurses, people in med spas. I know some of the best injectors are nurses. However, I do think that there's a different level of anatomy training and knowledge that's out there when you're a surgeon. It's just different. I mean, I respect a ton of dermatologists as well, but none of them have lifted up the skin and looked inside at the blood vessels, the muscles, the nerves, the structures there. So personally, I'm a little biased towards physicians. But I want you guys to make up your own decisions, and you may not all be near a fabulous plastic surgeon like Dr. Devgan in Manhattan or near me in Los Angeles, but it's so important to make sure you have someone who has all the skill set to treat you if anything does go wrong or if you have any complications or issues.
It's kind of like when you're getting married or trying to find a spouse. You know, everyone is great when the sun is shining and everything's perfect and you're on your third date and, you know, all the stars are aligned. But you need to find someone who's going to be able to care for you and do the right thing for you when everything is going wrong and it's a worst case scenario situation. And I think that that's one advantage of, you know, being in the position that you and I are in. That being said, they're very talented providers with all different kinds of training backgrounds, and there's no one correct recipe for success. So I absolutely have tons of practitioners with all different training backgrounds who I personally respect. But, you know, life doesn't make you any promises. So what you try to do is reduce your risk of having a problem.
Yes, exactly. And I want everyone to feel confident in the idea that you should take time in yourself. And I feel like as a woman, we have different demands on us than men do. And we were joking about this earlier that men don't know how to multitask and women do. And I think that's so true. And it comes from having children and running a business and running a household. And like, there's so many things on your plate. But it's funny that we've joked about, can you do it all well? And the answer is no. What do you think? I don't know if I do everything well. Everyone is like, oh, how do you do it? And I'm not sure if I do it very well because I feel like I'm constantly juggling and constantly dropping one little ball here and there. But overall, it looks like a pretty good juggling show. So what do you think?
I think it's a myth. I think having it all is a total myth. I think that you can have a lot of what you want, but you can't have everything at exactly the same time. And I think there are days when I sacrifice time spent with my family because I'm in surgery late or I need to go the extra mile for a patient. Similarly, there are days when I really want to focus on my kids and I get coverage for my medical practice and I, you know, take the day out of seeing patients. But can I be super mom in the operating room and also at the PTA meeting at the same time? No, I can't, and I have not figured out the way to do it. So don't beat yourself up if you can't figure it out. You know, I am very happy with my choices, and I think that everything comes with different sacrifices. And a lot of times the sacrifices are borne by our family members and our kids, and not even just by us alone. Mm-hmm. So that's something to think about. But, you know, balance is a tricky thing, and I think all of us struggle with that. Ultimately, you have to figure out how you can be the best version of yourself. And for some of us, that might mean spending a lot of time at work. For some of us, it might mean spending a lot of time at home. For a lot of us, I think it means doing both of those things. Everyone's different and there's no recipe for success. I don't feel like anybody really has it all if you really creep and look behind the scenes. But we have most of what we need, and that's a good thing, and we should be lucky and feel happy about that.
I think so. And then just always remember that work is overrated. So we all have work. Work is important to sustain us. It's important for creativity and fulfillment. But like most important, I would say, is family, kids, and love that surrounds you. Because one of my patients always tells me, it's time for you to have that talk with yourself on your deathbed. And because looking back at your life, are you going to be, you know, really super happy that you stayed in the office for 15 hours a day or not? And I know the correct answer, but still that aggressive perfectionist type A part of me wants to be in the office helping patients and really growing my business. But I also want to look back on life and say, yeah, I went on these amazing vacations and I did these great things with my kids and I built all these memories. So that's, now I'm in this phase of my life of thinking more about, like, talking to myself about my life needs to be focused on things that are going to be great memories, great experiences, not materialistic goods and not so much like fame and fortune, just like what really matters when you peel away the cobwebs. And I would agree with you. Super hard to be the woman who's like, I can't do it, right? Can I get up at 5 a.m., work out for an hour, drink my green juice, go drop the kids to school, meet with the teacher, then go to the office and see 25 patients and do 2 surgeries and get home and cook a fabulous dinner in my lingerie for my husband? I can't. I can't.
I am definitely ordering takeout like almost all the time. So that's definitely some time I've carved out for myself. And, you know, I try to make special moments with limited time. Like the other day, my kids wanted to build a gingerbread house, and I'm sure Martha Stewart spends 5 hours making a gingerbread house, but I definitely spent like 15 minutes flat before work, before school drop off, and we made that gingerbread house, and it was a pretty good house. Maybe not a Martha Stewart house, but the kids were happy, and like that's just a compromise that I make to be able to make it work.
So awesome. And I love that you take time to do artsy things with your kids. So it's a big part of our lives to be artists as well as surgeons, I think, because that's important to appreciate the beauty in what we do. It's not just like doing injectables and like changing people's bodies. It's like really creating beauty every day. It's such a big responsibility to be a plastic surgeon because you're in charge of someone's self-confidence and like how they project themselves to the world. So I really take it personally. Like I really make sure that I'm doing my very best and my most artistic work. It's not just shooting someone up with filler in and out of my chair.
I totally agree. And one piece of advice that I sometimes give to younger doctors who come and visit me in the office is never get cynical. Always remember how special this profession is and what an honor it is that other people trust you to take care of their faces and bodies. And it's such an incredible responsibility and it's such a privilege that every day, even if you're grumpy and tired and, you know, they accidentally made your coffee decaf or some other crime like that, you have to just not allow yourself to get cynical. And those moments where you start to feel bitter and jaded, that's when you know you need a little extra self-care and you need to sleep a couple extra hours and recenter and then be idealistic again. Because, you know, it's not about the destination. It really is about the journey. You know, you were talking about this earlier, but we don't have that many years on this planet, and every day that we have is a special gift. Every day with our kids and our parents and our friends and doing professions that we love, and even for people who are doing things that, you know, that aren't their passion and they're still searching for their true passion, even that journey and that searching process is really a special time. So just try to not get cynical and keep your idealism.
Yes, and remember the simple beauty of everyday life, like enjoy that cup of coffee, the reading the paper, like not everything becomes rote work after a while. Even being a fabulous plastic surgeon, everything has its routine and it's, you know, it's not all glamour and no job is. So I just want to remind people that are young, that are working hard towards something that's a future fabulous life, that it's 80% work and 20% glamour. And that's so important to think about because I know my kids think it's all glamour and like 20% work. And that's not what it is. I'm sorry to flash this to you, but
no, and it's okay to be a late bloomer. I think both of us were pretty late bloomers. And the late bloomers kind of have the last word because you work really hard and delaying gratification does give you a little payoff in the end because, you know, I think I wasn't even cute till like last year.
That's not true.
But wearing like big glasses and like self-cutting bangs that were like a centimeter long for most of my young adulthood really helped me study hard and not be distracted by boys and things like that.
That's very true. I think it's so important to get your ambitions and like solidify all your education. Do the maximum you can to make the best person out of yourself. Read everything you can get your hands on. And don't be distracted by wanting to be one of those flashy, you know, people that's out there partying every night. Like, put your nose to the grindstone for a few hard years and make something of yourself. It's not glamorous, but that's how you do it.
And don't focus on, I mean, as long as we're just giving unsolicited advice, is that?
Yes, that's right.
This is this portion of the podcast where we just tell other people what to think. Okay, so here's my.
We're talking to our daughters.
This is for my daughters. When you're a little older and you have an iTunes account, you can listen to this. Don't be seduced by all of the flashy materialistic stuff. You know, the best things in life truly are not the things that are like the fancy.
They're not things.
Yeah, they're not things. They're not. It's not blingy, fancy stuff. It's not material objects. It's not fast cars. You know, I'm at the point in my life where, you know, I'm very fortunate that I could, you know, get whatever car I wanted to get. But I choose to walk or take an Uber or drive my Honda Odyssey minivan. Great car. And the materialistic, flashy, showy stuff doesn't matter. And I think that's so important because a lot of us are really focused on an end point that in the end is empty. Like once you attain all of these, you know,
Chanel bag,
shoes and, you know, fancy Chanel bags and, you know, the new Celine tote. And, you know, all of us love beauty and glamour and fashion to some extent, but it doesn't fulfill you and it doesn't make you whole. And in a sense, it just leaves you wanting the next thing.
I totally agree. I hope that my daughters are listening. Those of you who want designer goods that you can't afford, daughters out there and friends and followers, don't do it. Like, invest in yourself. Please don't buy yourself a bag or a pair of shoes that is so out of your budget. Like, put that into yourself and your face and your skincare and your reading and go on a trip. Do something that's going to change you as a human. But let's finish off by bringing it back to plastic surgery tips and tricks. So I'm going to just give you a little pop quiz here. Favorite skincare product?
I love my skincare line. Check it out if you haven't already. I know you have a great one too, but just in terms of product categories, retinol. That's my can't live without skincare product. It'll keep your skin glowy, nice, dewy, fresh, wrinkle-free.
Yes, I love retinol. I would also add glycolic acids. Those are amazing for exfoliation and brightness. Favorite app on your phone?
Instagram.
Yay. That's the first app we both probably check every day. Second favorite?
I like Gmail, Uber, Seamless Web.
Interesting. Okay. And last book you read?
I like Atul Gawande, and I just reread Complications. I first read it about 10 years ago, but I reread it recently. Very nice book for those of you who are interested in medicine.
Excellent. I don't think I've read a book for 10 years, having had so many children and no time at all, but I will read that for sure. Favorite TV show you're binge watching?
I'm trying to binge watch House of Cards right now, and I'm on the last season, but I just haven't had the time to fully commit, but I do like the show.
Best advice for someone who's wanting to get breast implants?
Do your homework. And go to a plastic surgeon who's board certified by the American Board of Plastic Surgery, who's reputable, whose before and after photos you've checked out, and make sure that your gut check is there. Like, you should feel good about the entire experience. Make sure the office is clean. Make sure that you're taken care of, that people answer your questions and they're courteous to you. And make sure that you don't have like kind of a negative gut feeling.
That's a good one. And then favorite procedure for first timers thinking about doing something for their face?
I mean, I think Botox is a can't lose, but I also think that we as a society vastly underappreciate the beauty of the cheekbones. And in plastic surgery, we often say that cheekbones represent 70% of facial beauty. And I really think that they do add a very beautiful bone structure. Like if you think of some of the great supermodels of our era, Giselle, Kate Moss, Taylor Hill, everyone looks a little bit different, but they all have amazing cheekbones. So Botox, but then also just think about your cheekbones.
I think I would agree. Like the two things that can transform a face, Botox and cheeks.
Lips are really pretty too. And I think the jawline is really having a moment, but you know, I could go on.
There you have it. So, well, that's really been really fun talking to you live from New York City. And for those of you who are trying to find Dr. Lara Devgan, how can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram or on the web or on Twitter, Facebook. Everything is Lara Devgan, MD.
Perfect. And thanks so much for tuning in, guys. It's been fabulous having you listen to this little chat between plastic surgery boss girls. And hopefully you got some valuable messages from this. Be sure to check me out on my Instagram, doing amazing things with people's faces at Beauty by Dr. K. It's D-R-K-A-Y. And my website is the same, beautybydrk.com. And check out my amazing skincare as well. Thanks so much for tuning in and stay beautiful.